afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, March 27th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
I know why I'm coughing. I couldn't figure out why all of a sudden I started coughing. I was up in Lancaster County this weekend, and the farmers, oh, my Lord, they're fertilizing their fields, and and it does get to you, and, you know, with all kinds of stuff in that stuff.
Well, it's springtime when the fertilizer is in the air, Melody.
Oh, my gosh. And I was right in the heart of it. And I think it sort of carried through to... I brought it down here to Berlin, Maryland. But anyway, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. And Alfred, you know, I woke up about... It was 2:30. You know what? I'm just going to... I couldn't sleep. So I thought I would turn on Bloomberg and see what's going on in the world, which is my first thing that I do. And I was tickled pink to see gold was up very strong, and it really did maintain its lead today. Came back a few dollars, quite a few, but when it was in the aftermarket at 2:30 this morning, it was 12-something, and this is pretty much where we're at right now. And there were pressures on the market. The Dow was down 166 points, and they brought that back down to barely nothing. So... that did change. So, you know, all the focus was on the Dow Jones and the paper markets today to make sure they didn't have any bigger pullbacks than what they permitted. So let's go on with gold. We have gold in the, let me update this again, in the New York spot price aftermarket. You're looking at gold up 11.30. It was just 12 just when I started my little commentary there. 1255.20. Silver did great today, up 34 cents at 1818. Platinum was up 5 at 972. And palladium was down 14 at $798. The USDX today was down 0.58 at 99.19. Crude oil today was down 0.19 at 47.78. And the paper markets today, the Dow was down. There's still the last couple ticks coming through. We're looking at the Dow is down 45 points at 20,550. I think that makes it the 10th day that it's been down. The NASDAQ was up 11 at 58.40, and the S&P was down 2 at 23.41. 10-year yield down 0.03 at 2.37%, along with the euro was up 5.7 at 109 for the euro. And let's just creep down to that fear and greed index, 29. So it's holding at 29 on that fear level. But you know, depending on what your view is and, you know, what you believe is happening in the markets, many believe, you know, the Trump rally, all because of the health, the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act didn't go through. We're beginning to see cracks in exactly what this new administration can do. So, you know, all the promises of a strong tax cut might not be as strong as what was once promised. And, you know, perhaps the cutting and the getting rid of the alligators and so forth. So there's a lot of big questions, and this is what's putting the pressure on the stock market. Well, you know what? A couple hundred points in a week and a half, you know, really doesn't, is this the big time? It could be, Al. You know, I think you asked me that last week. But, you know, something still has to move it. And if we just if we lose the Trump rally, we're still at 18,000, which is way overpriced anyway, was my point.
If we get down to 18,000, it'll fall lower than that. If it happens to fall, the momentum will carry it down further than that. That would be my expectation. I don't know. It's as if we need a couple more straws before the camel's back begins to break. We'll watch and see, though. When I got up this morning, first thing I did, I didn't look at the markets until after they opened. But I thought, I had a feeling, you know, there was something. I thought, I wonder if we could have a really good day in gold. When I first looked at it, it was up $16.50. And I said, whoopee, boy, that was the way to start the morning. It isn't up that high now, but just the same, that was a good surprise. And the dollar was down in the 58 range, or excuse me, 98 range. It's come back somewhere. It's now in the 99. But just the same, it was down all the way in the 98 range. I think it was about 98.8, something like that. I don't recall.
Yeah, gold's high today was 1261. So, you know, nice day in the markets. And again, as I mentioned and as I told you, Al, you know, when gold was starting to go down, breaking 1200, I says we're going to see 1300 before we see 1200 again. And we were going to see it by Friday. And, you know, the gold market continues to climb along with the silver. So there are a lot of things going on underneath other than just the Trump rally. And when our economy stinks, there's more and more things that are beginning to weigh on our economy. And it is true. We got debt. You know, we got a debt ceiling that hasn't even been whispered about. And, I mean, certainly the government can employ extraordinary measures to keep it going. Some now say, you know, instead of June, they can actually take it through this fall. So if they take it to this fall, hoping that they can hold it off till maybe these tax cuts get done in August, maybe to, you know, but I don't know. It's a lot. And I don't think the markets will be able to hold on to the lead like they have. Gold will, but I don't think the paper markets will. So, I mean, there are extraordinary measures they can fund. And it's just amazing because what they do, I mean, one of them, what they can do is they go into, for the U.S. to keep from defaulting on its debts, the government uses the federal employees' savings plan. They have no problem going in there and taking their money or non-depositing money into those accounts. And also the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund or the main pension fund for federal workers. They have no problem using those accounts to pay their debts. And you never, ever hear them saying that they put the money back, did they? Just like they did the Social Security or what Clinton did on the Social Security accounts back in the 90s. They never put it back. They take it. These are the only funds that have money in it. They can also suspend other things in order to move money around to pay for their debts. And that money never goes back. So it goes to show you the government wouldn't hesitate taking your retirement accounts.
Well, the government retirement accounts, they have easy access. It's a little easier to do that than it is to rob the
Social Security. They'll go through those first. They'll go through those first. And
well,
then when those are empty, then they have no problems going after the general populace retirement accounts.
I agree with you. You know, they're just showing you, you know, the government really believes that there's nothing more important in this country than the government. And if the people have to go broke, too bad for them. We've got to preserve the government. And that is a questionable presumption. You know, I'm not convinced that government's all that important. I'm not convinced that we can get along without a whole bunch less government than we have. So, but they act from the perspective, oh my God, the world will come to an end if they're not here to manage it. And
it's not a matter of just managing the government, Al. I mean, I would nothing more than I would like than to see them get true monetary policy, a true, you know, better system than what we have. I mean, we have to go back to some degree to the old system. However it's created in this new world, I don't know. I mean, there's various scenarios and so forth and whatnot. But people don't understand that when, you know, you have to be careful what you wish for because it would be devastating. Just like Obamacare, when it collapses, it'll be devastating.
I agree.
It has a lot of impact. It's easy to say, "Oh yeah, let it collapse."
It will be like riding on the Titanic. No one is going to enjoy it when it sinks. We're all going to get cold and wet. But some of us may be in a lifeboat, and some of us may be left to, you know, swim for it on their own. That lifeboat, it's going to be a whole bunch. It may not be pleasant, but it'll be a whole bunch more comfortable and survivable than being tossed in the ocean all by yourself. That's part of what we talk about. It's not as if you're going to get a free ride. you're going to get a less bumpy ride. I got an article here from Yahoo Finance that goes along the lines of what you were talking about. And the headline is, investors haven't been this worried about a market crash in 4 years. There's the headline. It says market volatility has been relatively low in recent weeks. The volatility index, which jumped this week, has generally been trending lower, reflecting near-term sense of calm. Furthermore, investor sentiment reading since President Trump's election reflects increased optimism in the market. But one survey tells a very different story. According to Yale's latest Crash Confidence Index, concern about a market crash within the next 6 months is at the highest level in 4 years. Concern about market crash hit all-time high in 2009, which was not long after the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy. The event exacerbated turmoil in the credit markets and worries of a deep economic depression. Meanwhile, investors have been paying... Now, here's his... Currently, investors have been paying up for insurance against an unexpected stock market shock. The CBOE Skew Index, which reflects the price of protection against market tail risk, which is a chance of a major sell-off in the Standard & Poor's 500, has reached the highest level since Brexit in June. Now, Brexit in June is not that far. It's less than a year ago. You know, that's not necessarily compelling information. But here's something that was interesting to me. It says, contrary to recent opinion, we were talking about the optimism that we get from Trump. Well, the point here that they're going to make is that maybe Trump's not the source of the optimism. They say, contrary to common opinion, recent market strength may not be as dependent on Trump's pro-growth promises as presumed. Improved economic data and reflation, I'm going to try to get inflation started again, improved economic data and reflation accompanied by a return to a more normalized interest rate are behind the upward move in stocks. Strong stocks, this is according to someone named Golub, last name Golub. It says strong stock returns in the months prior to Election Day and on November 8th, when Hillary Clinton was expected to win, support this view. Now, this point is that stocks had begun to rise before Trump was elected and while Hillary was expected to be elected. Right? And this implies that the markets did not strengthen because either Hillary or Trump was elected. They would have strengthened under any either case. And this raises the possibility the real reason for their strengthening was because Obama was about to be removed from the White House. And maybe the markets didn't care who came in. They could have elected Donald Duck instead of Donald Trump, and the markets still would have gone up if they could get rid of Obama. The bottom line is, whether it's Trump or the economy or something else, there's a lot of confusion and disagreement surrounding the recent market run. We'll only know in hindsight if the ultimate outcome is a prolonged bull market, a market crash, or something else. Well, they say they see three possibilities: a prolonged bull market, a market crash, or something else. I have a very hard time believing that the bull market, the perceived bull market in equities, is going to last for any length of time. I mean, I don't expect it to be here in middle summer. I don't see the bull market continuing indefinitely. A market crash, maybe yes, maybe no. Something else would be not a bull market, but some sort of a mild bear market where prices were going down. What do you think, Melody? Prolonged bull market, market crash, or something else?
I think the reason that you have all of these theories on why the market is at 20 or touched 21,000, we'll just use that as a number, is because everyone knows that it's not real. So everybody gets to, you know, create their own opinion and so forth on why it is. Mm-hmm. Most presidents will get the, whoever is in the office at point in time will get the credit. I mean, Obama didn't get the, you know, Bush didn't get the, you know, the credit for crashing the markets, but Obama, you know, is taking the heat for increasing the trillions of dollars of debt. And whether we agree with what he did or what he didn't, I mean, you know, we, you know, it could have been much worse, I guess. personally, it should have been. I mean, they should have just left it go. They shouldn't have bailed out anything and so forth. But, you know, it's hindsight, and they shouldn't have done it. We should have dealt with what was coming to us. But they didn't.
Nobody wants what's coming to us, Melody. That's why we have religion.
Is that why we, yeah, perhaps.
We don't want what we deserve. We want something, we'd like something a little better than what we deserve, and therefore we're hoping our sins will be forgiven.
But the confusion is because everyone knows this isn't real. And, I mean, you have to show, I mean, yeah, sure, there's jobs, sure, the economy turned around a little bit and so forth, but how really, you know, the improved economic data, the normalized interest rate, well, the rates, you know, it was debatable.
I
know. That's, yeah, I know.
It's normalized. I mean, most of my life, if it was down as low as it is right now, people would be shocked.
Yeah.
This is normalizing. Yeah, we'll be back to a normal. At this rate, how long will it be before we get to a normal rate of interest, Melody, which
time.
Might be 3-4%, something like that?
Yeah, normalized would be 5-8. 5-8% would be normalized.
Right.
So, you know, we know if it goes over 3, we know, again, they can't get there. So, no, I mean, there isn't anything that makes sense. And you also have to remember, and again, do I like all these Goldman Sachs working in the White House? How much have they influenced these markets through Goldman Sachs and, you know, through the financial working group? You just don't know. And that's the, you know, and that's the, you know, the con- they can't hold it here. You know, they just can't hold it here.
Yeah, that's and again, bottom line, whether it's Trump or the economy or something else, there's a lot of confusion and disagreement surrounding the recent market run.
You know, and
there's
the market
confusion and disagreement will feed ultimately fear. Ultimately, it is conducive
to some
sort of
correction.
And
you're right, the market was going up when they thought Hillary would win. But you got to remember, when Trump was elected, the market dropped 1,000 points and they brought it back.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Well, it's hard to say what's going on here for sure, but
you know, you can pick
whatever it is, it's not. There's evidence that it's not just all about Trump. And if it's not all about Trump, what is it all about? And after Trump, we would have to look to fundamentals. That hasn't changed in a meaningful sense, which means it's about control.
The failure of changing Obamacare, that means people are going to have less money in their pockets. That means you have businesses that will probably lay people off so they can continue paying the increased rates. I mean, it's going to have a negative impact on the economy. I don't care how many jobs you bring back. So, you know, just that alone. And if he can't drop those tax rates for corporations to the degree to which he promised, that's all negative. Doesn't matter if he's able to drop it 10%, it's still going to be a negative.
We're going to take a break for a couple commercials. Melody and I will be right back in a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoices.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Oh, you know what? I'm running a special in quarter-ounce American Gold Eagles. Normally, there's a premium on them over the premium of the one-ounce American Gold Eagle. And so I have some coming in that I can run a special on. And so all you have to do is figure what an 1 ounce American Gold Eagle would be. So we're looking at $1,255.63. An American Gold Eagle today would cost you $1,318. All you have to do is divide that by four, and your premium today, and I do round, would be $330. So it's a pretty good price.
For a quarter ounce.
For a quarter ounce American Gold Eagle. So yeah. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. So make sure if you're interested to give us a call, because I can't tell you how long we can honor that price for the quarter ounce. 800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and sign up for the weekly newsletter. It comes out every Monday, and it's health and wealth, and something very important.
Okay, we've got an article here from the Free Thought Project, which points out that $10 trillion are missing from Pentagon, and no one, not even the Department of Defense, knows where it is. Over a mere two decades, I don't know, that doesn't strike me as mere, doesn't seem appropriate to me. But over two decades, the Pentagon has lost track of $10 trillion. All right, $5 trillion a decade, $500 billion per year. I don't know. It's one of these headlines that you say, oh my God, the Pentagon has lost $10 trillion. I agree that's a big number, but they didn't lose it yesterday. They lost it over a course of 20 years. Works out to something like $500 billion per year. Nothing to brag about. Bad news. I get that. And I also understand that they have black budgets where they conceal things, because if their adversaries understand how much they're spending, if they had access to their real accounting, they'd know what they were doing and what projects they were working on and what technologies were being fostered and so on. I think the Pentagon probably has a reason to conceal where some of the money went, besides the normal avarice and greed that animates most government entities. I don't know what to make of it exactly. Not a good thing, maybe not a terrible thing. I'm not sure if it's a big time headline, or I don't know, leaves in the wind. Melody, what are you in the breeze? What do you think about $10 trillion missing from the Pentagon?
Well, that's a lot. That's half our budget. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that number is probably a little exaggerated, but, you know, we know even Rumsfeld came out in 2000, said that there was, what, $2 trillion missing. Yeah. So back in, well, I don't know if that was 2000, 2001, I think, I don't know if it was before or after the 9/11, but I remember him coming out saying there was $2 trillion missing. So, you know, $2 trillion times now, 20 years later, well, almost 20 years later, it's, you know, it doesn't seem that far-fetched. But certainly, you have to ask yourself, are any of these wars on budget? I mean, are they all off budget? So we really don't even know.
Kind of.
Numbers don't mean anything anymore, because it's not real. It's not real anymore. So, you know, these numbers just get bigger and bigger. People get used to it. Remember when you thought $1 million, oh my gosh, if you had $1 million,
That was something impressive if you were a millionaire. All right, that would be equivalent to perhaps having $100,000 today.
$100 million.
Yeah, $100,000. Today's millionaire is equivalent to someone who had perhaps $100,000 when I was, you know, young man.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal anymore. Billionaire, yeah, that counts for something. I saw back just last week or so a report where the number of billionaires in the world, there are allegedly about, if I recall the report correctly, about 2,004 billionaires in the world.
And there's 3,000 of them, probably more, that don't want to admit that they're billionaires, that they're very private.
Well, those would be the ones that are in the in political office.
They're not your Warren Buffetts or your Soros and those guys.
No, they're like Putin, for example. You know, Putin is probably a billionaire.
But, you know, they prefer...
Maybe Obama is or will be.
But still, a billion. I mean, you have Bill... Is it Bill Gates will be the first man to be a trillionaire?
Maybe.
I mean, does anybody really know how big those numbers are? That's when we talk about our debt, when we talk about, you know, just the 20 trillion, forget the 100 trillion. Does anybody really understand the degree, the amount of money that is?
Because it's so far removed from ordinary experience.
Yeah.
All right. You might know somebody who's a millionaire. Okay, we can work with that. That's not something so foreign to experience. You couldn't say, hey, Joe Smith, you know, he's got $1 million. All right. That's in your world. That's part of your world. But what about a guy who's got $1 billion? How many people even know someone who has $1 billion on anything like a personal level? How many have an employer who has $1 billion? Those numbers are beyond the horizon of our personal experience in most cases, and therefore they're just kind of incomprehensible. Plus, we have a world where the value of any currency is constantly shifting and typically diminishing due to inflation. Right? And it's part of the reason why a millionaire back when I was a kid would be equivalent to $100 millionaire, today. It's hard to keep track of these numbers and make sense of them when the value of the number is constantly shifting, which goes back to the problem we have with fiat currencies. Right? It would be, we could comprehend a lot of these numbers if $1 million when I was a kid was basically the same as $1 million is today. Then we'd have a feel for this. We could have a feel for these numbers. But when we have $1 million when I was a kid is equivalent to $100 million today and the whole thing is constantly moving, it's hard to keep track and it's hard to get a real feel for it. So a billionaire becomes something fantastic and hard to understand, believe, and when $10 trillion disappears from the Pentagon, I don't know. Is that as significant as 9/11, or is it more significant? You know, what's more significant, Melody, losing $10 trillion or having some sort of an aircraft fly into the side of the Pentagon? Which is more significant?
Well, I was talking about $2 trillion being lost around that time, not specifically.
But they claim $10 trillion now.
But they claim $10 trillion now. But Rumsfeld admitted to $2 trillion at that time, somewhere around that time frame. So, $2 trillion around that
time. They admit
time.
To it, but nobody's going to do anything about it. It says here, over the past 20 years, the Pentagon has broken every promise to Congress about when an audit would be completed. They keep promising, oh, we're going to audit, we're going to find out about this stuff, but they never do. Meanwhile, Congress has more than doubled the Pentagon's budget. You know, one thing about this is, if it was up to me, I'd say, all right, you guys can't keep a budget, you can't get any more money. You're not going to get any more money until you get your budget squared up. We want to keep a budget. If you can't do it, can't account for what you're doing with the money, we need a different army, we need a different navy, we need a different air force. We'll have to fire some people, you know, dishonorably discharge a bunch of others and see how it works out. But it's not tolerable. It's maybe not a terrible thing, but it's not a tolerable thing. It should be stopped. What else do we have, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to make a correction. I said it was in the beginning when the Dow was down, I think the 9th, 10th straight day. It actually declined for the 8th straight session.
Okay.
But it did pair its losses after it dropped more than 180 points, you know, earlier. So I just wanted to make that correction. I knew it was long. I thought I saw 10, but I guess it's just 8. But I guess it's the longest losing streak since 2011. So,
well, nobody's panicked yet.
Nope.
All right. And whether that losing streak is going to be sustained or it's going to be extended remains to be seen. But on the face of it, it doesn't inspire confidence. You know, you should be a little bit wary. Maybe things will bounce upward again in the immediate future, or maybe we'll see a 300-400 day down.
You know, I wanted to talk about this one topic. This was from the Daily Mirror or Mail. I guess I don't know if that's equivalent to the Inquirer or not, but Nigel Farage and leave backer Aaron Banks, they returned from a trip to California, and they helped to raise $1 million for a Cal exit. Now, that's not the exit from the...
For California?
It's to split California in two. They're pitting the eastern part of California, which is more of a rural side, against the western coastal elite liberals that you would find like in Los Angeles and San Francisco. So, of course, the eastern part would more likely vote Republican and so forth, giving the party two more senators and electoral college votes for the 2020 election. So they were campaigning in California, and they raised over $1 million. And I'm thinking, you know, what are they doing over here messing and trying to split the state of California in two?
I understand. I mean, if you want to meddle in your own country's affairs, that's fine. If you're tangled up in the European Union, go ahead and do what you got to do over there. But this should not be their concern.
No, and I didn't understand what it is of their business now. Who brought them here to do this? I mean, you know, they had to have some sort of backing from somewhere, whether it is from the RNC or what. I don't know. But the goal is to hold a referendum during the U.S. midterm elections in 2018. So I just thought, it's just not fair, and I didn't know if you'd have opinion
it's
on
disturbing.
That.
It's disturbing because I've regarded Nigel Farage as an exceptional good guy up until now, while he was speaking against the power of the European Union. He was saying, look, we need to stay out of this. He's really ultimately the one guy that caused the Brexit. He's been working to get Britain out of the European Union for, I don't know, a decade or more, and he finally prevailed. He is one of the people who has changed world history to a significant degree. And I liked what he was doing, but I do not understand. I have a hard time understanding why he would be foolish enough to do this, because he has to know this is going to change the American people's opinion. I think he was generally liked and respected by people in the United States. If they knew about him and say, yeah, this guy's okay. Now they maybe think, no, he's not. I don't know why he lost. I don't know why he risked his whatever goodwill might exist in the United States for him. Why did he, why did he risk that in order to help divide California? Very strange, very disturbing to me.
Well, it makes me wonder if it isn't coming from the RNC, because we know he was over here supporting Donald Trump. He went to, I don't know how many of his campaign rallies and so forth. I don't know if it was one, two, or five, but I know it was at least one, and certainly interviewed and touted during Trump's campaign. So I'm not sure.
I can't believe that any major political party in the United States is going to stand up and advocate that states should be divided or they should secede or whatever. You'll get individual politicians who may do that, but I can't see that the Republican National Committee or the Democratic National Committee, either one of them, are going to stand up. Oh, yeah, we need to get rid of half of California. You can't do that and expect to get elected.
Well, there are several campaigns that are competing for a referendum in the U.S., and one of them is to remove the state from America completely, as we mentioned, after Trump was elected last year. So I don't think it's that far-fetched, but it's interesting to see who is backing them to do this. Farage and Bang's goal is to hold that referendum, as I mentioned, Banks said of the campaign, it would be portrayed as the Hollywood elites versus the people breaking up the bad government. 78% of people in California are unhappy with their government. It's the world's sixth largest economy, and it's very badly run. So I just thought it was interesting, and I agree with you. It's like California 2 weeks ago received an award from the American Association of Political Consultants. So perhaps that's the organization that is supporting their interest.
Well, like I say, we live in interesting times, and it just gets stranger and stranger. It's like something from Rod Serling. Did we elect Rod Serling? Is that who Donald Trump really is? Is he Rod Serling from the Twilight Zone back in the 60s or 70s? Is that what's happening right now?
I really liked Rod.
Yeah. I enjoyed the Twilight Zone, but I don't think he belongs in the White House. And I'm not sure
Particularly now, maybe he is.
I don't know. Maybe the Hollywood writers. It's not the actors. It's the writers who have taken over in Washington, D.C., and everybody's just reading their... Say, what's this? I can't get into this part I'm supposed to... Just read the lines, Mr. McCain. Just do as you're told. Yeah. I got an article here from The Street called Sears has finally admitted that it's almost dead. The zombie retailer is on its deathbed. Kudos to Sears Holding Corporation for finally admitting that what everyone already knew, it's almost dead. Last Tuesday evening, Sears indicated in its newly filed annual report that, quote, substantial doubt exists related to the company's ability to continue as a going concern. That's an extraordinary admission. Sears' cash position has melted from a high point of $1.7 billion for 2009 to a mere $286 million to close out 2016. All right, a fifth as much money today as they had in 2009, cash. Revenue hasn't grown since the credit boom lifted all ships in retail in 2006. The company hasn't generated cash flow from its operations since 2006. Earlier this year, Moody's downgraded Sears' credit rating from CAA1 to CAA2. The downgrade reflected the accelerating negative performance for Sears' business risk of possible default. Extraordinary. Hard to believe. I remember Sears as a child, and hard to believe that it's gone, but maybe it is. Incredible admission by the Sears administration. We'll take a break, a couple more commercials, Melody, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis. Here's Melody Cederstrom along with me on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
At the end of last year, some 42.4 million Americans owed $1.3 trillion in federal direct student loans. The total number of defaulted federal direct loans rose by 1.1 million. And this was according to the U.S. Department of Education. It was reported earlier this month by the Consumer Federation of America. More than $137 billion, about almost 10% of a total of $1.4 trillion in loan balances from both the federal direct loans and federal loans made by financial institutions are currently in default. And default is defined as being 270 days past due. The average amount owed has risen from $26,000 at the end of 2013 to $30,650 at the end of last year, and that's an increase of 17%, far higher than the inflation rate over the same period. But so again, here's just another sign. And these kids, you know, hey, they're upset because Bernie Sanders didn't get elected. I can't even imagine what this might look like by the end of next year. Because 270 days after the election, you know, it might just be real interesting. Bet that number doubles by the end of next year.
I'll tell you another thing. Without knowing for a fact, I'll bet you the default has been previously defined as a briefer period, a less lengthy period of time. I'll bet default was at least, previously it had been 180 days rather than 270. It might even been 90. All right? If you haven't paid your bill in 90 days, you're in default. Maybe. I don't know if that's true or false, but I won't be surprised. It's one of the ways they minimize, they could minimize, I don't know what they've done, but they could minimize the reports of default by simply extending it out and saying, look, we've defined default to be anybody who hasn't paid their bill in the last 25 years. So we don't have any serious defaults right now. Well, definitions, you know, they make all the difference in the world. And who's, and if they change definitions, they change the results of those definitions. And I just kind of, being suspicious, being naturally suspicious, I kind of suspect that maybe that's what's happened here.
But the gentleman, the Consumer Federation of America, he said that 3,000 preventable student loans default each day in America is 3,000 too many. Our broken system. So he admits the system is broken, works well for the student loan industry, but is failing borrowers, taxpayers, and our economy. So,
yeah, we see a lot of that. There's a lot, and we see it piling up and see it piling up and see it piling up, and it's like, yeah, it's like walking under an avalanche. Everybody's seen that analogy. Sooner or later, that one final snowflake is going to land on top of all the snow that's been piling up, and then all of a sudden, push, we get that avalanche charging down the mountain at us. And we are all in that. We all have we all have a certain amount of avalanche paranoia right now. We're saying, uh-oh, don't say anything. Don't stamp your feet or make any loud noises because, you know, that could trigger the avalanche. Everybody's kind of walking on eggs right now while we try to get past the avalanche area before the whole thing breaks loose. But we pretty much know what's going to happen. It doesn't necessarily have to. It could be that all that snow piled up over your head for an avalanche. Yeah, maybe we get to, maybe it melts in the springtime, get a bunch of runoff, but we don't get an avalanche. Hard to say what'll happen for an absolute fact, but it certainly looks like an avalanche is possible. Here's the headline.
Well, you know, there's rumors that President Trump might be considering some sort of a fire sale, you know, sell off some government assets to pay off some of the $20 trillion debt. And I guess William Shugart senior fellow at the Independent Institute, former economist at the FTC, was contacted to assess the feasibility of the idea, and of course including estimates of all federal assets. And I've talked to clients about the same thing, about how some of this land could be sold to, you know, to the public and so forth. You know, kind of like homesteading once again, you know, where people mm-hmm. go out and grab some land and, you know, slap up some, you know, fields and grow their food and you know, sustain and live a nice life. But should it be done? And how much of that could be done? Should we take advantage? Should we take advantage of the fact that the U.S. government is the wealthiest that's ever?
Here's the problem. I saw a book called The Freedom Amendment back in the 1960s. It was written by two congressmen. I don't know their names, and I haven't seen the book since. But it listed all things the government does that are contrary to what's in the Constitution. And one of the things is that when a state joins the union, it's supposed to join on an equal footing with the remainder of the states, so the states that are already there. And when a state joins the union, all of the land within the border of that state should be property of that state. But in fact, at the time, and this is in the 1960s, and I think it's probably roughly correct even now, the government actually owned about 50% of all the land west of the Mississippi. That includes on up into Alaska. And they owned 50% of the land. Now, that's a lot of resources. And when they talk about selling this, first off, that land, Alaska should own all the land that's in Alaska. All right? And Montana should own all the land that's in Montana. The only proviso for the federal government only owning land within the states of the union is for forts and administrative buildings and needful structures. They're not entitled to own all that land, and yet when they admitted these states into the union, with west of the Mississippi, part of the deal was because they started out, each of them, with the exception of Texas, started out as a territory that was owned by the government. They bought it, they conquered it, whatever. Iowa was at one point a territory. And when it finally got enough population, they could petition to become a state of the union. The government said, okay, we'll let you in, but we get to keep half your land. And the Iowans, they didn't care. There weren't enough people there to make much difference. It's all right, fine, keep half the land. What do we care? All right? But in retrospect, that was a bad idea. Well, it's perhaps a bad idea. The government has all that land. Are they really keeping it for future generations, or are they just trying to deprive the people who live here right now of that land? But in any case, it could be sold. I don't believe the government should own that land. It should be up to the states to control and own that land and do what they want with it. Not the federal government. But if it were sold, should it be sold to foreign investors? Should it be sold to corporations? Should it be sold only to people within the state where the property is located? Big question about who should get to buy that land. And one of the points about it is this. If you're going to, what the government is doing, they're looking for money. All right? They need money to spend. They say, okay, let's sell some of our land, which they could do. This isn't that different from issuing a bond. Right? The difference is that now the government, people aren't taking the government bonds. They can't really go deeper into debt, so they say, okay, we'll sell off some of our assets, and if you issue a bond, you get some currency. If you sell some of the assets, you get some currency. The difference between the bond and selling the asset is the guy that buys it actually gets something tangible. They are backing, they are saying, we're going to sell you. You are going to give us money, and we're going to back this whole deal with land. We're going to give you something tangible to back up your currency. It's interesting to me that they're contemplating that, because if I'm getting this idea across very clearly, it's evidence that the government is running out of confidence in its mm-hmm. ability to issue bonds. Something for nothing to say, here, we'll give you a piece of paper. You give us $100,000 in currency, and we'll give you a piece of paper with a signature on it and even one of those fancy gold seals. All you got is a promise to pay when you got that. This is not a promise to pay. They're in a position where they are perhaps having to give us real, tangible value for the currency that we give them. I think that's an interesting thing, a surprising thing, maybe a very important thing.
But you know, also under the land is also, you know, Mr. Shugart says there's, you know, a lot of minerals, oils, gas, mineral deposits, both offshore and on. Mm-hmm. And just who would they sell these lands to? And it's not going to be people to like you and me. It's going to be it should be, but it won't be. It'll be sold to people from China. It'll be sold to people who has.
And that'll be completely wrong. That will be wrong, wrong, wrong. If the government starts just in order to make a good on its stupid bills that it's run up an incredible debt, they start selling American land in large chunks to China or Russia or any other country, including Mexico or Canada, somebody ought to treason. Charge them with it. Go after them. It cannot be tolerated. It's another thing. It's like letting illegal aliens, encouraging illegal aliens to come into this country. It's like rounding up money to support some sort of a movement to divide California in half. It's contrary to the best interest of this nation. It's contrary to their duties when they took an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Anybody involved in this, in my opinion, is engaged in treason. Same thing. What should happen is this, in my opinion. Sell that land if you have to. Private Americans. Or, I don't know, there's got to be a way of doing this where ordinary people can get a chunk of that land. And then, if there are mineral rights under the land that the ordinary people have purchased, then they get a percentage. Mm-hmm. Not a deal where, well, we'll sell the land to the corporations and they'll get all the wealth off of the land and we'll let you other people, you go out there like sharecroppers and you can live there like serfs. No, I want to own my land. I want to own legal and equitable title to my land. And I want the mineral rights that are underneath it. And then if I decide to sell it myself, fine. Then the American people get the benefit. But they'll try to do this where they will divide the land up. They'll sell it off to some rich connected entities that may or may not even be Americans, and the American people will get diddly. The only thing we'll have is perhaps the satisfaction of seeing that some of the government's debt is paid. But even that, I don't know that complex, you know, where's the answer?
Well,
and the answer may, there may not be an answer, because we have painted ourselves into a debt debacle that is so enormous, there's no easy way, no painless way out. And no matter what you do.
I hope they don't use the land in payment of the bonds.
Well, I don't know. They will use the money to some extent in payment for the bonds. If they sell the land, they get currency. In theory, they will be using some of that currency to pay the bonds. I don't have a problem with that. I just have a problem with selling land to foreign interests. I have another problem with selling it to major corporations after we've been lending money to them. Taxpayers on the hook, lend money to the major corporations, too big to fail, the rest of that, and then they can buy the land and we can live like sharecroppers.
Yep.
Bunk.
Well, he says that these lands, the energy reserves are estimated to from $28 trillion to $128 trillion. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about our debt, I mean, we're talking about $20 trillion to $200 trillion. So it's like, okay.
It's
amazing to think that, you know, the energy reserves, if the CBO says $200 trillion, and those energy reserves is only 128 at the height, at the peak. I mean, kind of puts everything into perspective, kind of.
Yeah, for a moment, until they change the value of the currency again. It's all confusing. It's all disturbing. I suppose the first order of business may be to try to keep calm, which I don't necessarily do a very good job. It's not my forte exactly under some of these things. But maybe you got to sit back and recognize, look, we're in a world of hurt. Got to try to minimize that hurt as best we can. But the one thing about it that just sets me off is that some people are going to profit from this hurt.
Yep.
All right? They will say, ha, 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 to heck with the American people. We can make big money. We can get rich off this deal. I mean, this is the mentality behind Hillary Clinton and Rahm Emanuel with their notions that a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. You don't try to stop a crisis in this government. You don't try to mitigate, moderate, get rid of it, repair it. compensate for it. No, no, no. You exploit it. That's what the sensible politicians, that's what the big business operators do. They exploit the crisis. And that means if there's money to be made in a crisis scenario, they want crises. They want them. They may even help to make them. All right? Knowing that once we get into a crisis, we can manipulate people, make them do stupid things that will ultimately cause them to surrender their wealth for the benefit of whoever is manipulating. That's the sort of thing that infuriates, that's the sort of potential and fact, if it turns out to be fact, that just infuriates me. I mean, this country is supposed to be run for the best interest of the American people, not for the best interest of multinational corporations or the Republican Party or the Democrat Party. And yet everything is special interest. Where's mine? Give me a cut. All right?
Al,
I don't want
it.
Nobody wants fair.
Run.
We want advantage.
It hasn't been
advantage.
Run for the benefit of the people for probably 200 years. So.
Well, I don't know if it's that long, and it may never have been exactly, but it's never. They have never been subject to exploitation to the same
the day
degree
they
that
created
these
bankers. The day they welcomed bankers into this country was
yeah,
the day they began to exploit to the American people.
Should have said, look, we'll take your Muslims, but you got to take the bankers. You send the Muslims over here, but we're giving you the bankers. We might be better off.
Maybe.
We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my